It's good to be with you all. Matthew 7 is our text. I encourage you to turn there if you haven't already. You know, whenever we get together like this, on a day like this, as a local spiritual family, I think it's important to think about that we're all bringing different things in our lives to the throne of God. Some of us have had a really great week leading up to today, and some of us really have not had a good week at all. But whatever it is that you are bringing to God today, as you come to this place and you worship with His people, it's been good for me, and it's been good for us all to be together. I appreciate so much that God gives us the blessing of collective worship. So I thank you for being here in God's presence and for encouraging me in that. This is the law and the prophets. One of the great mantras of our current culture is taken from a snippet, not the whole thing in verse 1, but a snippet of verse 1, that is, you cannot judge me. Now, you can have your own thoughts. You can have your own opinions about what is right, what is wrong, what you think you need to be doing in your life, but you do not have the right to impose those understandings on me and my life because I'm different from you. I come from a different place. I have a different background. I've got my own life. So you keep your thoughts to yourself. You can't evaluate my actions and compare them to an objective religious code or a way of living. We need to look carefully at what Jesus is actually saying here in this context, because what God does want us to become is a giver and a helper and somebody who does serve other people's lives in the way that they need to be served. But the only way for us to be able to help with wood that's stuck in other people's eyeballs, like what he's saying here, is for God to come into our own hearts and help us in the ways that we need to be helped. That's how that works. And that's the only way that we can fulfill the message of verse 12, which is where all of this passage leads to. So let's break this down into three different sections, 1 through 6 and 7 through 11, and then verse 12 by itself, and then we'll find a way to kind of stitch all three of these passages together. I think the middle passage is the core of how God wants to help us so that we can become helpers of other people. But let's look at 1 through 6 and what he's talking about with judgment. I think it's really important when we look at this passage to make this point that discerning the character of other people is commanded. It is necessary. But what he is teaching is God is going to use whatever measuring stick you do use for other people, he's going to apply your life to the same thing. And so when he says judge not, he doesn't mean that we can't make any kind of judgments at all about each other, because in verse 6, when he talks about not throwing your pearls before pigs, before dogs, how am I going to know who the dogs are? How am I going to know who the pigs are? When you get down to verses 15 through 20, a little bit later on in the chapter, how am I going to know who the false prophets are? You know, they don't come to me with convenient labels on their t-shirts. I've got to look at their fruit. I've got to hear what their words are, but also look at what their actions become. And I've got to make judgment calls about that and decide about their lives based on that. Now, is my judgment going to be infallible? Absolutely not. Only God's is. And so, am I going to have to course correct in my judgment of others? Yes, absolutely, as I get more information. But some level of judgment about other people is necessary. It's what he's saying we've got to do. We cannot live our lives without doing that. But what he is condemning here is unrighteous judgment. Somebody who is way more strict with other people and what they ought to be doing than he is with himself. And that's what the Pharisees were, is you lay these heavy burdens on other people's shoulders, and yet you're not even willing to touch them yourself. This is the person who is quick to think the worst about other people's motives and desires and refuses to give the benefit of the doubt. This is the kind of person who tries to play God and hands out harsh assessments of other people at the drop of a hat. We don't have the ability or the morality to judge in the way that God does. So we don't have the ability in that. We cannot just look at somebody and immediately see, like Jesus could, as he does in some stories, immediately see what is going on in their deepest hearts and motivations. Because even the actions that we see and the words that we hear sometimes can be misunderstood. Sometimes I've been with a person and they've said some things that I just thought, man, that is the most arrogant thing to say or to do. But as I get to know that person better and I get to see the greater context of their life, sometimes what looks like arrogance is actually words and deeds of firm conviction. We need to be convicted, don't we? So sometimes things can be misunderstood, and it takes time to get an accurate picture of who somebody is. But even with time, sometimes we can still misunderstand. We don't have the ability to see everything that God sees, and we don't have the morality to judge in the way that God does. You think about John chapter 8, in that great story of Jesus encountering a woman who has just had the most embarrassing moment of her life. She's been caught in the act of adultery. Somebody walked into the room, dragged her out to the street where Jesus was. A crowd has formed, and Jesus looks at her, he looks at the crowd, and he says, okay, whoever among you is great, let him who is without sin among you be the first one to throw a rock at her. And nobody does. And he doesn't either. And he says, you're forgiven. Go your way. None of us can take a breath. None of us can do anything without the abundant grace of God. And so how can we focus all of our attention on the failures of others when we ourselves, if we're honest with ourselves, have so far to go in our personal relationship with God? And so what Jesus is saying here is the way that you think and the way that you talk about other people affects the way that God treats you. Read verse 2 again. For with the judgment you pronounce on others, you will be judged. With the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Is he talking about other people will judge you? No, he's talking about the way that God treats us, because that's the context here. In chapter 5, verse 7, he's already established in the sermon that he's preaching here that if you're merciful to other people, then you will receive mercy from God. Chapter 5, verse 7. Chapter 6, verse 12 and 14 and 15. Our forgiveness from God depends on the way that we release grudges when it comes to our relationships against other people. So God will use the same measuring stick on you that you use on others. And then he gives this very famous, very classic illustration that I just love every time I read it. That demonstrates this point. We can and we should try to help other people, but we can only do that well. We can only correct others properly if we are also introspecting, if we're looking at ourselves and not just being aware, not just noticing what's wrong, but also taking it out, removing the flaws that we have, and always holding out the possibility that even though I see a problem in you, actually the bigger problem might be my attitude about you or sins that I've got in my own heart. I think this is such an interesting illustration, because what was Jesus for the majority of his life before he started preaching at about the age of 30? He was a guy who worked with wood. in construction projects. He was a carpenter. And so it's interesting that we've got an illustration about wood. The Greek word for log in this passage is kind of interesting. We're not talking about like a walking stick. We're not talking about a yardstick. We're not talking about kind of a little-ish piece of wood. The Greek word for log is a piece of heavy timber, such as a beam, used in roof construction or to bar a door. This is a massive piece of wood that is sticking out of this guy's eye socket, which couldn't literally happen, but it's a picture that Jesus gives us here. And so in both of these guys, there's wood in the eye, but who has the bigger issue? Is it the guy who is being approached or the guy who is doing the approaching? As you look around, you probably notice some legitimate things that need to be fixed in other people. And there might be some specs in others that you are uniquely qualified to help out with. That maybe God puts you with that other person so that you can help. But if your vision is obstructed by cynicism, well, you know, yeah, that person's got problems. I don't know if they're ever going to change. I don't know if they're going to accept help. I don't know if they're ever going to improve past the point where they are. Or if your vision is obstructed with frustration or impatience or coldness or a whole range of things that should not be in your eyeball, then how effective are you going to be at helping that other person? Sometimes the biggest problem is not in them. Sometimes it's me. And so Jesus says, first take the log out, then you will see clearly how to remove the speck. He doesn't say you shouldn't remove specks. He just says you better see clearly before you try to do that. Then you can be helpful. As a side note, I think those of us who have teaching personalities are sometimes the worst offenders at this kind of thing. Because if you have a teaching personality, you're used to being the talker. You're used to being the one who shares with other people. You're used to being the instructor. But we teachers, and there are a lot of us, we're blessed. It's a blessing to have a lot of teaching personalities in this room. We also need to become teachable as well. Because if I have a log and I'm not seeing my log, you would be a good brother or a sister to me if you come and you tell me about that. Because sometimes, you know, the Word of God, ideally, as we read it and as we study it, we see, oh, yes, I am not like that. I have a log. I need to do. But sometimes I'm reading right past the things that I need to be pricked by. And sometimes the benefit of a church family is for people to say, I believe there's something here that you're missing, Nathan. Sometimes that awareness only happens with other Christians. So we need to listen. Because even though it's embarrassing to be told that you've got a heavy beam sticking out of your head, it is what's best for the kingdom for us to change and to help each other with that, to be aware and then to do actually something about it. But then we have verse 6. And verse 6 is an interesting verse, I think, for Jesus to throw into the mix of all of this. Because there, what he seems to do is he kind of goes to the opposite side of the spectrum. And he says, you know, there are some people that you really shouldn't try to help. In verse 6, he says, if I can get to it there, do not give what is holy to dogs. Do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn and attack you. So we got to be discerning when we spread the message of the kingdom to the world. And if we encounter somebody who is so hard-nosed that they throw it immediately back in our faces, we need to not keep trying to push on that door. I think the animals that Jesus talks about here would have sent a shiver of disgust down the spines of the people who were listening to this, because dogs, as we talked about before, dogs in the ancient world were mostly, not all, but mostly scavengers on the street. And even the Gentiles thought that way about dogs. This wasn't just a Jewish thing. Do you remember when David came up to Goliath? Do you remember what Goliath said to David? Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? Which is a weird thing to say because David didn't have anything like a stick in his hands. But am I a dog? And pigs, according to the law of Moses, Leviticus 11, Deuteronomy 14, pigs actually were unclean in the law. In fact, it says, their flesh you shall not eat, and their carcasses you shall not touch. Don't even touch a dead pig, let alone eat it. This is the way that some people act in their response to the gospel message. I've encountered people like this, and you probably have too. We need to be able to bear through persecution when it comes. But Jesus is saying here, you should not go looking for it. Do not rebuke a mocker or he will hate you. Proverbs 9:8. Rebuke a wise man and he will love you. We're looking for the wise men in the world. People who don't know Jesus yet, or don't know him as well as they should, but are willing to learn and willing to change and willing to remove things from their eyes. So judge righteously, he says. In 7 through 11, we have our famous ask and seek and knock passage. We've got three instructions in verse 7 that are symmetrically repeated in verse 8. So you've got, let's read the verse again, ask, and it will be given to you. Notice all of these are linked up to promises. It's not, well, you might, possibly. It's, it will be given. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be open to you. And then in verse 8, he repeats it all. For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks, it will be opened. It's an interesting passage. Ask and seek and knock for what? Jesus is pretty general in the way that he says that, so I believe that we can apply this to a lot of different situations. If you've got a non-Christian in the world, and they are knocking on God's door, and they are seeking the truth, and they're trying to figure out what is God's will for my life, and they're asking him about that, Cornelius, for example, God's going to help that person understand the gospel and come to him. I think we could apply this to Christians who are suffering as well. If you are going through a tough time and you are asking and you're seeking and you're knocking on God's door for help, he's going to give that to you in his way and in his time. But let's think about this passage in its context. Because in the course of this sermon, what has Jesus instructed people to do? Well, 5:44, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. 5:48, be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. 6:25, don't be anxious about physical things in your life. 7:1-5, identify people who are dogs and pigs, but don't ever set yourself up as the final judge over somebody else's life. These are really challenging teachings. And at this point in the sermon, I think most of us here are thinking, this is beyond my capability to do in the way that he wants me to do this. These are these high ideals and these standards that he throws out that are unattainable to me. I think what he's saying here is, the sermon is not too hard if you ask. Don't we do the same thing with our kids? Now, Isaiah, I want you to go vacuum the living room. Take the vacuum out and go do that work. Well, but Daddy, what if the bag gets full? Well, how do I change the bag? Well, you ask for help in doing that. And I'll come alongside of you and assist. But I want you to get it out of where it's stored, and I want you to plug it into the wall, and I want you to start working. And I will help you if you come and ask me for help. if that's what we do with our kids, isn't that, and he compares our relationship with him to a father and a son here. Isn't that what God does with us? So if you're seeking righteousness, humility, discernment, all these things that he's talking about we need to have in our hearts, and you're thinking, this is, I don't know how to do that, then you got to ask for them, and he'll help. Because if we, as Jesus says, who are evil, if we who are evil know how to love our kids and take care of them, isn't the Father going to care for us since he is perfectly good? When your child comes and says, I'm hungry, Daddy, what do? You know that your child depends on you for nourishment. You can't look at your four-year-old and say, well, I mean, you know where the pots and pans are. You know where the ingredients are in the fridge. You just go in there and you whip up a gourmet meal for yourself and me while you're at it. And you just take care of that yourself because you're a big boy. No, you're going to help your child. And what are you going to give him? Not something that's going to harm him. You're going to give him as much good food as he needs. So isn't that what our Heavenly Father is going to do for us? As much as I love my six children, I don't love them perfectly as a father. But what God does is he loves us with complete unselfishness and complete knowledge of who we all are and how it is best for him to help us with whatever needs that we need help with. He knows we're on the front lines of a massive cosmic spiritual battle that we can't physically see with our eyes, but that we are all in up to our necks. And so if you're holding out your empty hands and you're saying, I don't know how I'm going to do this kingdom work that you've given me to do, he's promised to help you if you ask. And now we get to verse 12. I want you to notice at the beginning of verse 12, you might have a different word than I have in my translation, but in the ESV, I have so. So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets. You might have a therefore or something like that. We're meant to see that this verse in verse 12, which is frequently plucked completely out of this chapter and this context, it has a context to it. It's meant to be thought of in the train of thought that is flowing through this text. Therefore, because of what I've just said, Jesus says, you need to love and you need to give and you need to serve undeserving people because that's what your God does for you. God gives us good things. He's just said that in the previous section. So shouldn't we be turning around and doing that toward us? God keeps redefining love in this entire Sermon on the Mount as unselfish initiative of not, I'm going to sit here and wait while you come and you serve me, but I'm going to go to you. Because 5:46, isn't that what Christians do that distinguishes us from the world? If you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And in the next verse, 5:47, if you only greet your brothers, only greet the people who are like you, only greet the people who pay you attention, what more are you doing than other people? Don't the Gentiles do the same? We know this. And yet sometimes we are so bad at actually practicing it. How many times have you done what I do sometimes, pat myself on the back in a self-satisfied, smug grin because I have just refrained from doing something bad to somebody else that I had the opportunity to do. Boy, when I was with that guy and he said that thing or he did that thing and I had the perfect zinger. I had the perfect thing to do or to say. I didn't say it. I didn't do it. Isn't that great? Jesus would say, well, it's the first step. Controlling yourself and not blowing up or flying off the handle or saying something unkind or unhelpful at the moment, but you have not started to love that person. Love goes way beyond that. What Jesus is teaching here was really revolutionary. Now, a lot of people have looked at this passage, looked at this verse, and have said, this is really not anything new. That so many different religious teachers have come along down the pike, and they've said something very similar to this long time back. I mean, you can go to ancient China. You can go to the teachings of this guy named Confucius. And Confucius said something like this. What you do not want done to yourself, do not do to others. You can go to ancient Greece, and you can think about what Socrates said hundreds of years before Jesus walked the earth. What stirs your anger when done to you by others, do not do that to others. And then you can think about Laurie Miller's favorite philosopher, Aristotle, who said, we should bear ourselves toward others as we would desire they should bear themselves toward us. But you can also go to the Jews. And you think about Rabbi Hillel, and it's a little bit hard to nail down when he lived, but he was operating in the last century before Jesus. He said this. So he was approached by a Gentile who said, hey, I want you to summarize the entire law of Moses in the time that it takes me to stand on one leg. And Hillel said, well, I can do that. This is what it is. Do not do to your neighbor what is hateful to yourself. Now, do all of those things sound pretty close to what Jesus says in verse 12? Yeah, sure. But what is the difference? What do all of these things not say that Jesus does? Read verse 12 again and notice the difference. So whatever you wish that others would do to you, do also to them. Because that's the law and the prophets. Do you notice how all of these quotes are passive or negative, and that Jesus is saying something that is positive and is active? He's not saying don't do. He's saying do. He's saying take initiative. Rather than just stopping yourself from doing harm, which is what all of these teachers seem to be getting at, Jesus wants you to get off your couch and zealously serve other people in the way that you would like them to care for you. How many of us have had thoughts like, boy, it would be sure nice if somebody could do fill in the blank for me? Well, have you ever gotten lost in a selfishness loop with that kind of thought and just retreated in sullenness, in isolation, and withdraw rather than in active love? What Jesus says here is what it takes to break that loop. No, your fellow humans are not going to love you perfectly just like you don't love them perfectly. That's not a newsflash. But the real question is, what are we going to do about that? If you have the gospel in your heart, if you have what Jesus says, not what these guys say, if you have what Jesus says in your heart, then you're going to spend your day busy and active trying to encourage and teach and serve, and you're not going to discriminate between people that you like and people that you don't like. But if you don't have the gospel in your heart, you are going to smugly sit on your couch and wait for other people to come to you. That's how that works. May God help us to be different from the world. Verse 12, Jesus says that his statement here summarizes, in a better way than Hillel summarized, the law and the prophets. But what's interesting is, since this is in the core sermon of his teachings on that mountain, this is not just the law and the prophets, this is also transcending the covenants, and it forms the core of this new teaching that he has brought in, this gospel of the kingdom. What he's getting at fundamentally here in this whole passage here in chapter 7, 1 through 12, is that God is trying to get into your heart and change you to become someone that gives and serves and helps, because that is the kind of Father that we have. But I want you to notice how 7 through 11 forms the core of what this passage is about that influences both of the scriptures that are around it. Because if you are someone who is going to God and asking Him, seeking, knocking for Him to change you and to help you in the ways you need to be changed and helped, then what can you then do? Well, on the front end of this, in 1 through 6, you can become someone who can properly look at specs and know what to do about them. And then on the other side of that passage, you can become someone who fulfills what Jesus says in verse 12. So you can be someone who makes righteous judgments, and you can be someone who gives to others, not based on their track record toward you, but based on what you know of what love and service should look like, because you'd like to receive that yourself. This is challenging stuff. But this is what God is doing with our hearts in the gospel of the kingdom. This is what he came to preach, but also this is what he came to live. This is why he died. And this is why he calls us to die too, so that someday we can be resurrected like him. So this is where we're going to end things this morning. I appreciate your attention to the words of God. If we can help you in any way in your desire to seek and to ask and to knock on God's door, then please let us know how we can be helpful to serve you today, as together we stand and we sing the invitation song.